Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 4. Vidura approaches Maitreya. Text number 34. Deha
Vyasam
Cha Kasya
Evam
Dhyaranam Darya Vardhanam Anyesham Dushkara Taram Pashunam Viglava Tasyaivam Viranam Darya Vardhanam Anyesham Dushkataratam Pashunam Viklavatmanam Dehasam. Entering the body. Cha, also. Tasya, his. Evam, also. Dhyaranam, of great sages. Darya, perseverance. Vardhanam, increasing. Anyesham, for others. Dushkaram, very difficult to ascertain. Pashunam, of the beasts. Viklava, disturbed. Atmanam, such a mind. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's glorious acts and His acceptance of various transcendental forms, the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world, are very difficult for anyone other than His devotees to understand. And for the beasts, they are simply a mental disturbance. Purport. Transcendental forms and pastimes of the Lord, as described in Bhagavad Gita, are difficult subject matters for those who are not devotees to understand. The Lord never reveals Himself to persons like the Gyanis and Yogis. And there are others who, because of their envying the Lord from the bottom of their hearts, are classified amongst the beasts. And for such envious beasts, the subject matter of the Lord's appearance and disappearance simply a mental disturbance. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.15, the miscreants are simply concerned with material enjoyment. Who work very hard like beasts of burden can hardly know this personality of Godhead at any stage due to asurika bhava, or a spirit of revolt against the Supreme Lord. The transcendental bodily expansions manifested by the Lord for His pastimes in the mortal world and for the appearance and disappearance of such transcendental expansions are difficult subject matters, and those who are not devotees are advised not to discuss the Lord's appearance and disappearance, lest they commit further offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord. The more they discuss the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord in the asuric spirit, the more they enter into the darkest region of hell, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 16.20. Anyone who is against the transcendental loving service of the Lord is more or less a beastly creature, as confirmed in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Deyanyasam tatasyaivam dhiranam darya vardhanam anyesham duskarataram Anyesham Duskarataram Putpashunam Viklavatmanam. The Lord's glorious acts and His acceptance of various transcendental forms, performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand, and for the beast they are simply a mental disturbance. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasadagudare Srimade Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tiramane Namaste Sarasupim Deve Gauravani Vicharane Yurvishe Shashani Vari Paska Tiyade Sajara. Again, it appears that the Bhagavatam is heavily criticizing those persons who don't accept the Bhagavatam. So this seems normal. If someone doesn't like us, or I write a book, and in my book I criticize everyone who doesn't like my book. So that's just normal in the material world, something to be expected. Here the Bhagavatam is saying anyone who doesn't like the Bhagavatam is a beast, or less than a beast. Take one of these books. No, I'm not interested. Well, I thought you were, and you look like a beast anyhow. And this is mentioned many times. Nivirte tar share upagiyamanas pagosha yas chocha manavira ka usma shalta ganar nivarana kumadhi rajeta dinapashidna. That is, knowledge is received in the simple succession, Nivritta Tarshara Upagiyamana. Bhavoshaja, and it's said to be the remedy, the cure, the medicine for Bhavoshaja Strotra Manobhirama, for the material existence, for material conception of life. In other words, our philosophy is absolute, because people don't like it. Nowadays, if you say my philosophy is absolute, because everyone says their philosophy is absolute, but our philosophy is actually absolute, it's scientific, because it's based upon the fact that we're not this body, that we're spiritual beings. And the soul has a different nature than material nature. The material nature means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Whether one is a human being or an animal, that's the activities of this body. They may be decorated in different ways, sophisticated, but basically speaking, material life means to eat, to sleep, to have sex, and somehow or another try and defend ourselves. And this is known as the material consciousness or the consciousness of that of the animals. So it is not that we're against the animals. We also like animals. The devotee Vidya Vinaya Sambhane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Jaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. The devotee sees everyone, whether it be a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, or a dog eater. They see everyone with an equal mind. They know that actually the cow or the dog, or even the dog eater or the Brahmin, that there's a soul inside that particular body. That body is made out of the three modes, in the modes of ignorance, then one may be in the lower species of life, in the higher realms of the modes of nature, in the mode of goodness, one may take birth as a Brahmin. In any case, the soul does not actually change. The soul remains spiritual. Potentially, it has 50 of the 64 qualities of Krishna. It is the Amsa, or the particle of Krishna, but in illusion, it finds itself in a particular mode of nature and struggles, as Krishna says, karshati, especially with the mind and the six senses. Therefore, the soul that doesn't accept Krishna consciousness must accept material consciousness. Yadahankaram ashitya, yosya iti manyase, mityaisha vyavasayase, prakriti tvam niyokshiti. And under illusion, Krishna said, under false ego. In other words, as soon as we accept a false ego, then we'll simply struggle with this material body, trying to somehow or another figure out some means of maintaining it and avoiding its destruction. So if we don't accept Krishna consciousness, then everything in the material world is more or less a struggle. So that struggle is the same struggle for all of the entities. Whether it be the Indra Gopajarma or Indra, everyone is struggling to survive in the material world and to free ourselves from the perplexities of material existence. But when such persons are engaged in the struggle, here it says, hearing about Krishna's pastime is more or less a mental disturbance. It is a mental disturbance because they think either this is simply a waste of time listening to it, or Krishna is so powerful, even if I become very powerful, how will I be able to conquer him? Therefore, he mentions here several verses that Tanaham Dvishita Quran Samsarish Naranama Shipram Yajastram Ashubam Asrishveva Yonishu. For those who are envious and mischievous, and the lowest among mankind, for them I perpetually cast into the demoniac, into the ocean material existence, into the various demoniac species of life. So this sounds like God is somewhat of a very cruel, vindictive person. Anyone who looks at him the wrong way, he takes him in his hand and throws him into the burning fire. Die! Another asura burnt in the blazing fire. So this doesn't sound like the peaceful cowherd boy who's playing on his flute during the day, and at night he sits on his throne and throws asuras into the blazing fire. No, actually there's a certain mood that we have to understand Bhagavad Gita also in Krishna's statements. It is not that Krishna takes great pleasure casting the demons into the various demoniac species of life. And Krishna is quite worried about the souls in the material world, but part of the rectification is that if they don't want to hear about him, then he puts them into a position by which they don't have to hear about him. The neighborhood dogs, and there's quite a few neighborhood dogs, none of them come to class to hear about Krishna. And even if you go out and you chant Hare Krishna to them, they can't understand what you're doing. They're not in anxiety that my illusion will be taken away from it. They're completely absorbed in illusion, and no one, practically speaking, can actually free them in the least bit from their illusion. So those who are determined to stay in material existence and to maintain some conception of being separate from God, of being an independent controller and enjoyer of the material world, then Krishna provides different species of light to fulfill their aspirations and their different states of conceptions of life. Therefore, for them to hear that they're not independent, they're completely under the control of the laws of nature, or they're under the control of God, and that's their only choice. Either you accept God's control or you accept illusion's control. This is the last thing that they want to hear. That they can't get away from God. Therefore, Krishna says, Anaham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavrita mudayam navijanati lokayam ajam avivyam. That I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, yogamaya. So the bewildered persons know me not, I'm unborn and inexhaustible. Krishna is simply reciprocating with the desires of the soul. If the soul wants to understand that the soul is a servant of Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself, and then the soul realizes that he or she is the servant of Krishna. And when the soul doesn't want to realize that, then Krishna hides himself more and more according to our desire. So the soul, bewildered soul, thinks himself more and more independent from Krishna, and more enjoying Krishna's resources in the material world. But the Bhagavatam doesn't say that these persons are very elevated. Svavedra hostra karar samstuta parusha pashu niyat karna patiyopeta jatanam kadagraja. It's condemns such persons as dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So again, Prabhupada would point out that I'm not calling these people hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. The Bhagavatam is calling these people hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And not simply vindictively that, as I said, they don't like us, then they're hogs and dogs, camels and asses. It is not vindictive, it is scientific. It is a statement coming from the Bhagavatam. Therefore, we can understand its intent is not to criticize people unjustly, but to give people an understanding of the type of persons that don't accept the Bhagavatam. They're compared to dogs in the Bhagavatam because the dog has no independence. It is completely dependent on the master. Just like there's one little dog, which we glorify all the time, has become somewhat depressed or lost its spirit. But previously, we used to walk around, and every time it saw us, it would start barking like anything. Because no one took it seriously. But in any case, I did bite one devotee one time. Not really bit him, but came close to biting the devotee. But as soon as the master would come, immediately the tail would go between the legs and would become very submissive and humble. Because it was thinking that I am in the service of my master, he's giving me so much food every day, so I have to do something to show him that I'm a good servant. So as soon as someone come around, he'd just go, wow, that was his service. He thought, this is my swarup, that my only thing I could do for my master is bark like a mad dog, frighten the intruder away. Because his service is a waste of time. Even the master didn't even like it. But it had a service attitude. That's his service attitude towards his master. And it's manifested. So certainly in the material world, everyone is servant. People get their PhD degree, and then they simply go door to door, Prabhupada said, begging. Now I have my degree, please, I'm a bona fide dog. I've been trained up for so long to become a bona fide dog, and here's my degree to prove it. I'll do any nonsense. I'll say any nonsense. My degree proves it. Just engage me in your service. And Svavit Vrahostra, Varaha. Those who eat anything, they're compared to the hog. Eat anything, have sex with anything, sleep anywhere at any time, they're compared to hogs. And camels. Camels, they enjoy especially tasting thorns from the branches of a tree, because when the thorn cuts its tongue, it drinks its blood. And think, oh, the blood is very sweet. So the materialistic person who is enjoying sense gratification, actually drinking their own blood, they're thinking, oh, this is very sweet. And Karar, Hostra, Lustra and Karar, the ass. The ass is pulling on a very heavy burden, working very hard, and all it gets is some grass for all his effort. So people are working hard and all they're getting is a piece of toast, if they're lucky. You see, you go to one of the, or on the airplane at least, you see what people are eating, and it is not very palatable. But that they spend hundreds of dollars to take this airplane ride, to go from one place to sleep in one place, and then take an airplane ride so they can sleep in some other place, and eat the food, but it's not very palatable. Just like, as I mentioned before, they had this famous brand of cereal, very popular in America, and they were experimenting, what is the nutritional value of this brand of cereal? It's called shredded wheat. Very famous, you know, that you'll have a healthy breakfast if you eat the shredded wheat. So they fed the shredded wheat to rats to see what the effect would be. But they noticed that the rats, they wouldn't eat the shredded wheat, they were eating the box that it was contained in. They knew better than to eat the shredded wheat. working hard, but the result is very meager. So persons who are this mentality, they simply have bigger leaders who are the same mentality, but in a bigger way. But when it comes time to taking Krishna as a leader, or when Krishna is represented as a leader, they think, oh, this is a waste of time. Because this is due to the modes of nature. The modes of nature will certainly misdirect one. And the more one is misdirected by the modes of ignorance and passion, then the more the modes of ignorance and passion bring one to the lower and lower modes of nature. And it's not that only the non-devotees are misdirected, but Maya is very tricky. She is misdirecting all of us. To the extent that we're not Krishna conscious, Maya is there to misdirect us. To have us waste our time thinking that there's something other more valuable than becoming conscious of Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada, he makes a statement in Manmana Bhava Madhvako, Madhyaji Mamdamas Guru, Mame Vaishasi Satyam Te Prati Jani Priyosime. Krishna says, always think of me. Become my devotee, worship me. And the Asuras think, this is ridiculous. These people are part of a cult, becoming a devotee of God, worshipping Him, etc. They don't even want to hear about it. And we think, oh, we want to make the Asuras happy. We don't want to disturb them. We won't go out and chant Hare Krishna. So many Asuras will be disturbed. So better have to stay at home and not disturb the demons. But our job is to disturb the demons. And even if our mind gets a little disturbed by disturbing others, that's all right. But that's our job. That's where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is meant for, is to go out and find the demons and chant Hare Krishna. So they'll become purified. Even Arjuna, he said, Staneri Shikesha Tava Prakritya Jagat Parisha Parirajate Cha Rakshamsi Bhitani Jisho Javanti Sarvam Samagnosi Tatosi Sarvana Sarvam Sarvam Samagnosi Tatosi Sarvam. That's the previous verse. Staneri Shikesha Tava Prakritya Jagat Parisha Parirajate Cha Rakshamsi Vitani Jisho Devanti Sarve Savapnanti Chasita Sangha. Arjuna said, all the world becomes joyful hearing your holy name, and thus all become attached to you. But the demons, they're afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. So that's expected. As soon as the demons, they hear Krishna's name, they'll become afraid, and they'll flee. So we become very happy seeing that. On the other hand, those who are actually sincere devotees, they'll become enlivened and enlightened by hearing Krishna's name. That's why we're going out and chanting Hare Krishna. That's what this movement is all about for. To enlighten the innocent and to, as Krishna says, vanquish the envious. That's their position in the material world. They don't want to hear about Krishna, so Krishna will give them the intelligence how to flee, either away from the Sankirtan party or into the various species of life, the lower species of life, but they don't have to worry about hearing about Krishna. No one approaches the dog on the street and asks him to buy a book about Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, or Krishna was here 500 years ago, so many persons became disturbed. But that didn't mean that Krishna, he became disturbed. No, when the demons 500 years ago, they tried to disturb Krishna, Krishna simply killed them for their benefit. And 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the Kazi said, no more Sankirtan, he didn't think, oh, got to obey the law. No, he organized civil disobedience, went out with the whole town, and told the Qazi, you know, I think you had the wrong understanding about the Sankirtan movement. Maybe you want to change your mind. The Qazi saw, you know, hundreds of thousands of people said, yep, I'm changing my mind. up with the Sankirtan movement. Let's chant and dance together. Therefore, we, as devotees of Krishna, we understand that the chanting is important for everyone, especially ourselves. This process of becoming conscious of Krishna 24 hours a day, this is actually the purpose and the goal of life. And that anything that distracts us from the goal of life is Shrava Evahi Kevalam, and that's true for everyone. Of course, we don't expect that everyone's going to take us as an authority, everyone's going to appreciate us, nor do we act foolishly, that we don't try to unnecessarily create social disturbances. But this idea of that you're a nice person if you're not God-conscious, if you don't try to push God-consciousness on others, that we don't completely accept. As much as we can, it's our duty to try to help people become Krishna-conscious. Of course, that has to be done with some tact and with some discretion, not whimsically, but if the price is, just like when Prabhupada was here, the devotees used to go on the street, and they used to get arrested all the time in so many different cities. So when Prabhupada heard about that, he said, no problem, just go to jail and chant Hare Krishna. That doesn't mean that Prabhupada condoned any nonsense thing that the devotees did. That may have been a legitimate reason why the devotees got arrested. The devotees, if they cheated people outrightly and they got caught and got arrested, Prabhupada didn't condone that. He condoned that the devotees went out in the street chanting Hare Krishna. What is the harm? Why did they make a law that you can't go on the street and chant the names of God? Even in Bombay, Prabhupada was very disturbed that they called this a nuisance. Bombay, Prabhupada was so surprised, how is it possible? Bombay, India, the land, Bharatbhumi, Bharatvarsha, the pious land, Bharatbhumi lay, Manushya Janma Yar, that everyone is taking birth in the holy land of Bharatvarsha, they should make their life successful. We're going out and chanting Hare Krishna, and they're calling us a nuisance. So what did Prabhupada do? He organized kirtan on the streets to get rid of the person who called us a nuisance. And in India it was effective. People don't call us a nuisance there anymore. Similarly, in many cities we became victorious. We can go out and distribute literature there or chant Hare Krishna. Not all the cities. Even in a place like Tehran, where at one time the devotees could go out and chant. I don't think it's recommended now. But Prabhupada said, Dayananda Prabhu said, we go out and we chant the names of Allah on the streets. So Prabhupada said, that's also the name of God. What's the harm? It's very good. So sometimes according to time, place, and circumstance, we have to present the holy name of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It is not that we were simply fanatical, and in spite of any opposition, we go on blindly. One has to use discretion to properly, or as Prabhupada said, in like a needle and out like a plow. That our conviction is that everyone is actually Krishna's eternal servant, and that this chanting Hare Krishna is a medicine, and for those who are not envious, who are not directly opposed to Krishna consciousness, who have not made it a policy that whenever the devotees say white, they say black. And when the devotees say black, they say white. We say we're not their body, they say no, we are the body. We say that Krishna is God, and they say, oh, Krishna can't be God. So we, for such persons, we're not interested in dealing with them. Upeksha. We try to avoid them. But if there's a question that there are other innocent persons and that we can't help but sometimes confront the atheistic, demoniac people, then sometimes we have to take that risk. And sometimes we may not be able to discriminate who's atheistic or envious and who's innocent. Therefore, the Prabhupada says that the devotees, even more than Krishna, Krishna says, Deo ime loka na karyam karma chedaham sankara sichakartasyam upahanya imaprija. That this is in chapter 4. Not chapter 3. The Buddhi Beta Janaya Agina Karma Sanginam Josiat Ksara Karmani Vispam Yukta Samatra. So as not to disrupt the mind of ignorant man, attach the true results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working the spirit of devotion, you should engage in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. Although it probably writes in the purport, all rituals, all performances of sacrifice and everything that is put into the Vedas, including all directions for material activities, are meant for understanding Krishna, who is the ultimate goal of life. But because the conditioned souls do not know anything beyond sense gratification, they study the Vedas to that end. But through the fruit of activities and sense gratification regulated by the Vedic rituals, one is gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities for understanding, but should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. Although the ignorant man is not to be disturbed in his activities, a slightly developed Krishna conscious person may directly be engaged in the service of the Lord without waiting for other Vedic formulas. The Prabhupada says that the devotee is more kind than even the Lord. The Lord tells us not to disturb anyone. But the devotee, knowing well that if we don't disturb these people, that they'll all go to hell, to the demoniac species of life. Therefore, at risk sometimes, just like Lord Nityananda, at a risk he approached Jagaimana. And even though they hit him with a clay pot, he didn't think, well, you were going to hell anyhow, but now you're going to the deepest part of hell. No, even though he hit him with a clay pot, still he was merciful to them and delivered them. So the devotee has to have that attitude. And by such an attitude, he actually invokes the compassion of Krishna. Now, that's how Krishna's compassion is invoked, when Krishna sees a devotee at all risks goes forward in order to try to convert people to Krishna consciousness. And why is that? Because they know that every species of life, every living entity, is actually Krishna's eternal servant. They're just being misdirected by the illusory energy. Therefore, out of compassion and out of duty to Lord Krishna, knowing well his desire, sometimes they take a risk like that. On the other hand, when they meet someone who's a determined atheist and they can't do anything to convert them, to convince them, then they just try to avoid such persons. Knowing well, they'll simply become more offensive, as explained here. Certain persons, as they hear more about Krishna, they'll become more and more disturbed. One time I was arrested in Houston, Texas. This is in 1970. We just went out on the street, and immediately the police came and arrested us. Vicious criminals chanting God's name. They couldn't believe, because at that time all we wore was dhotis on the street. They couldn't conceive why these weird people are coming out here, disturbing everyone. So they arrested us immediately. And when I was in the police station, I was chanting Hare Krishna, so the policeman said, don't do that. So I thought, oh, this poor person, he's so bewildered. I better chant louder to help him. So I chanted louder. Southern Texas policeman, exactly not mild-mannered. So he became very disturbed. He said, don't do that. And so I chanted a little louder. Then he took out his gun and he was going to hit me with his gun. So then I realized that maybe he wasn't giving the full effect of the mantra. So my volume, my chanting reduced. So some people will not appreciate the chanting very much. Because Krishna will protect his devotees. Just like in Houston at that time, they couldn't believe that these weird people had come into town. There was no such thing as a cult. at that time. They didn't even think we were a cult. We didn't even have that status. As far as they can see, we were weird people dressed, men dressed in dresses, coming and invading their town, stuff like that. The best thing to do with this, I'm sure most people thought, was just to take a rope and end our misery. Home of the Ku Klux Klan was only, 40 kilometers of where we were from, where we were chanting. So, we were all arrested, and then they took us before, they had a televised program for the, council, their city council, and we were on trial in their city council. So they were questioning Vishnu Janaswamy. There were only three of us. It was Vishnu Janaswamy, Srinath, and myself. So they were questioning Vishnu Janaswamy on television. And one person went up to one of the persons in the audience and said, "I'll give you so much money if you go up and hit him during the program." Vishnu John. But luckily the person he offered the money to was a reporter, and during the television program he mentioned that this person in the audience offered to give me so much money, to come up here and hit this person. So then all the publicity turned towards our favor, and they gave us permission to chant on the street. Not that it convinced all of the Texans at that time from Houston that we were doing the right thing, but at least it gave us a forum to actually go out every day and chant and distribute literature. So Krishna will actually protect his devotees somehow or another, although sometimes it seems it's not. Protection is not immediate sometimes. In other words, if we try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, then Krishna will make the arrangements. And gradually those who are innocent will become convinced. I remember there was one devotee who later on became a sannyasi. Every time he saw the devotees, he'd take one of the books from them and then rip it up, throw it at the devotee. So gradually, by such association, he became purified. He joined the movement, later on became a sannyasi. It's not the recommended method of purification. But sometimes even such association later on proves effective. So we don't know how people will be benefited, but that is our mission. And those who don't want Krishna consciousness, Krishna will also make arrangements so they can avoid us. It's not that we can force anyone to become a devotee. It is a voluntary thing. But most of the people, practically everyone, is innocent. There are only a few persons who are actually inherently or naturally or determined atheists. Unfortunately, such persons are generally now in control of our society, which makes it a little uncomfortable for the devotees, or in their attempts to spread Krishna consciousness. But even such persons will be exposed by the Sankirtan movement, and gradually they'll wind up fleeing if we chant Hare Krishna loud enough, long enough. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Krishna consciousness is universal. It's not some kind of sectarian philosophy or consciousness. It is just a broadening of what most people already think is religion. They say they love God, but we're simply giving information who God is. If they're sincerely trying to search out the absolute truth, which I think amongst all persons who adhere to the religions nowadays is not necessarily the truth, the fact. Most people accept religion because they were born into the religion. They're not really interested in the tenets of religion. And even those who accept religious life, they generally do so for economic development or for some kind of material elevation, not to actually realize who God is. But if there's a sincere person who's actually searching for the absolute truth and has taken to a certain religious process, then they'll appreciate it. that this philosophy can actually broaden their understanding of their own religion. Then you'll probably find yourself in trouble. But if, you know, certain places it wouldn't be recommended. Prabhupada, when they were doing Harinam in India, people misunderstood what we were doing. So therefore Prabhupada stopped the Harinams and had life membership instead. Because he saw that would be more effective. The book distribution people couldn't understand in India at first. So sometimes according to time, place, and circumstance, we may have to change our approach. But if it can be done and we don't do it because we don't want to disturb anyone, that's a whole different thing. Okay, yes.
You also said that our philosophy is scientific because it's based on the five aspects of the body.
Yeah.
Right? So, what are the arguments to prove the existence of the soul before and after the body?
Before and after the body? Because we have nothing to do with this body. There's always a before and after. We've had so many bodies. Every moment we're getting a new body. So we had our body before, and we have our body afterwards. It's not that we have to change our body completely to get a new body. Every moment we're getting a new body. Science means that which is true all times in all places for all people. So this scientific knowledge is true for everyone for all time. Everyone, from Brahma to the meanest insect, since time immemorial, has been changing their body from one body to another. Yet the soul, the same souls are always there. So this is science that applies to everyone for all time. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, Kita, Srila Prabhupada, Kita, or from the